Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Yeah, we're back with you again just a few days after our last podcast because we've had a development in Brewers world. The 2020 Rookie of the Year awards announced in both the NL and the American League on Monday night, and the Brewers' Devin Williams has won the third Rookie of the Year in Milwaukee Brewers history. He joins Pat Listash in 1992, Ryan Braun in 2007, beat out Alec Baum of the Philadelphia Phillies and Jake Cronenworth of the San Diego Padres. Pretty exciting thing for the Milwaukee Brewers. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. And on the other line, as always, is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We did talk about this in our last podcast last Thursday. And Tom, you mentioned that you had a vote, actually, which we will get to. We will get to your vote. That became a little bit of a topic on Twitter late Monday. But just in general, how surprised were you by this? I mean, I really thought it was a toss-up 60-game season, not a lot of data to work with, kind of no clear-cut front-runner. I had no idea how this was going to go. I was surprised that Devin Williams won, but I don't know if I should have been. How did you take it when you saw the news come through?
Well, I was, as people will see when we talk about my ballot, because I did it, like you said, I did have a Rookie of the Year ballot. I was surprised, but I was even more surprised that he won so easily. I thought this was going to be a razor thin margin. I mean, he ran away with it, you know, and that was very surprising to me for many reasons. The relief pitcher versus position player, not the least of it. But you know, that's not to say he wasn't deserving. I was just surprised at how the vote went. But I do think this very first vote showed us how unusual the season was and how unusual the voting process was. I wonder if we'll get any more big surprises in the remaining ballots. It'd be great if Rick Renteria won the Manager of the Year in the American League after getting fired.
I mean, well, it's going to be him or Kevin Cash who is the villain of the World Series, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I often criticize what I call the small sample size police, the people that, you know, want to attack you if you run any stats out there that they consider a small sample size. But everything was small sample size this year, and I think it made it more volatile in the voting. And it led to a thought process that I now consider a bit errant on my part, and we can talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Devin Williams received 14 of the 30 first place votes. Like you said, won fairly easily. Both Baum and Cronenworth tied for second with 74 points overall. I don't have it in front of me how many Williams had. I think 95. I think he won with 95 overall.
95 points, right. And so there's three names that you put on the Rookie of the Year ballot, JR, and they are assigned points in a 5-3-1 manner. So you add up Devin Williams was on 27 ballots, so three guys didn't even put him in their top three. And you add up all the points, and it came up to 95. The other two, I thought it was interesting they tied at 74, because I think a lot of people thought that they would be close, but that they would be close for one and two, not for two and three.
And I absolutely think those two guys, in a way, canceled each other out, because the other two top candidates for Rookie of the Year, and they finished fourth and fifth, were Tony Gonsolin and Dustin May, both right. Pitchers from the Dodgers. And I kind of thought maybe both being pitchers on the Dodgers might have sort of split those votes. And then you've got two offensive players with pretty comparable numbers. I think Alec Baum is better, but you've got two guys that are fairly similar in numbers. And then you've got a middle reliever who's doing things no one has seen before. So he's an outlier just by nature of what he does. And that maybe plays into your vote. You and Andrew Wagner, both of the two votes from Milwaukee, as people noticed and found out when everything was made public, you didn't vote for Devin Williams first. You had Williams in your top three, certainly, but you had Alec Baum at the very top for Philadelphia. So I know you were going back and forth with some people on Twitter about it. You sort of expressed some regret about your decision, but I personally think it's totally defensible. But give some background on your vote process.
Well, first of all, somebody asked me, is this the first time anybody's won one of the awards and not gotten a first place vote from either writer in his own city?
And it could be. Who knows?
I know. So, Lisa, you can call us dummies, but you can't call us homers, right?
Oh, you would have been
Not.
called homers if you'd picked them. You're danged if you do, danged if you don't. You're going to get the
Yeah,
homer or
that's a
the.
difficult thing. But I will say, JR, that while I did think about that, it was not a decisive factor in my process. Because here's the way I look at charges of homerism. If your guy's the best guy in your mind and you vote for him, you're not being a homer. You're voting for the best guy. So this was not, I have been asked that I vote him third because I didn't want to be called a homer. I don't worry about stuff like that. 2 years ago, I voted for Christian Yelich as MVP and felt pretty daggone good about that vote.
So did everybody except for one guy.
Exactly. Now that's the guy that should have wondered if he got it wrong when it's 29-1. But so let's here is my process. So I did decide that Alec Bohm, Jake Cronenworth, and Devin Williams were going to be on my ballot. You have three names. So there, I decided for me they were the top three guys. You know, Baseball America magazine picked Tony Gonsolin as their rookie of the year. Just picked him outright.
Right.
And he did get one first place vote, and I don't think it was out of LA either. So one guy thought he was the best guy, even though he wasn't even in the top three. So I decided those were my top three. So now I've got to decide how I'm going to line them up, right? Because that 5-3-1 point process is important. You do want to line them up the way you think they should be. So after thinking about the reliever versus position player, factor, and then knowing that no setup reliever had ever won, and applying the, like I said, the 162 game logic instead of 60 game, I decided I wrote Williams' name down first in the third spot on my ballot because I decided I was going to give more value to the everyday players. Having looked at it since and thought about it and seen the voting yesterday, I realized in a 60 game season, I probably should have looked at that a little differently. But that's the process I use. So then, how do you pick between those two guys? Like you said, they were very similar in their numbers. And if the balloting would have been conducted 1 month into that 2 month season, I think Jake Cronenworth would have run away with it, maybe even been unanimous, like Kyle Lewis was in the American League last night, because he had like a one over 1,000 OPS for the first month. So I started looking at it and it really bugged me a little bit that Cronenworth had a great first month and then a terrible second month. He had a over 1,000 OPS in the first month and then 500 in the second month. I mean, he really fell hard. And the season, like even a 60-game season, looked like it was too long for him. On the flip side, Alec Bohm had a good first month, I think around an 800 OPS. And then a very good second month, close to 1,000, in the high nines, I believe. So he just looked more consistent to me. He did come up 2 weeks into the season, and I looked at that. And despite playing 2 weeks left, he was only 12 plate appearances fewer than Cronenworth. And I considered that negligible. So that's how I ended up putting. And then I also liked that Bohm led the majors in hitting with runners in scoring position. He was sort of the anti-Brewer. They had real trouble with RISP. So he was a clutch player too. I believe Cronenworth was one of the finalists for Gold Glove at second base, even though he also played two other positions. So I probably should have given him, extra credit for defense. But their WARs were pretty close. I think Cronenworth was 1.4, and Bohm was 1.2. So that's how I. That's how I. So I reluctantly, put Bohm first and Cronenworth second, but I had already put Williams third, so I kind of filled my ballot in from the bottom up, and then I sent it in. And I won't tell you who it was, but this person could vouch for this. Later that day, I called someone else from the Milwaukee chapter, and I never knew who had the other Cy Young Award. We submit names into the national chapter, then they assign votes. And I don't ever ask the other guys what they're voting on. It's none of my business. It should be your own. I do love that the BBWA has complete transparency when the votes are announced. You know who we're voting for. And I always
Definitely.
do it with my Hall of Fame ballot too. So, But I immediately called somebody from the chapter, told them what I did, and said that they convinced me that I might have screwed this up because I had some buyer's remorse almost immediately on that ballot. And I could have called, you know, and said before before they were announced and changed, or before they started tabulating, and asked to change my ballot if I wanted to. But I just decided to stick with it. And I'll tell you one thing. Even though I took a little bit of a beating for having him in third, I would have felt a lot worse about that if it would have cost them the award.
Oh yeah,
you know, then Lord have mercy, I would be in like a, I would be in a bunker somewhere today if that would have happened. So I'm very thankful that it didn't cost them the award. And when I saw that he got 14 first place votes, that's when I realized that other people had done a better job of applying a different perspective to a 60-game season than I did. You know, the 22 appearances and 27 innings really sounds light, doesn't it?
Yes.
For an award winner. But then, you know, he pitched in a third of the games. They played 60. So first guy ever, first pitcher ever to win it without being a starting pitcher or having at least one save as a reliever. And as he said on the show yesterday, on the award show, well, it's nothing wrong with being first. I kind of dig being first. So there's so many unusual things about him. And he's a good kid, and he's had a tough journey to the major. So good for him. And he was in Jamaica when he heard. So I hope he had a whole bunch of red striped beer last night after he heard he won.
Hooray, beer. A lot of philosophical considerations here. You know, the degree to which he is special, and you are special when, even if it's only been 27 innings, if you have 53 strikeouts in 27 innings, a mere 9 walks, you have an ERA of, I don't even know what it was. Was it 0? I think 0.33.
0.33. He had one earned run.
One home run that he gave up, just a whip of 0.6. I mean, that is ridiculous. And if you're looking at who is the most special player on this list, well, he's it. He's the one who's done something we haven't seen before.
Right. And I think that's where I had another malfunction of my thought process, is that I did not give enough credence to the historical crazy nature of his stats. Every time you look at his stats, you blink, rub your eyes, and look again to make sure you're seeing what you see. So I don't think I gave him strong enough consideration for just how crazy good he was.
But the other side of that coin is you could also say, look, these are so special. We know that doesn't hold up over a 162-game season. Right. Now, you just said it. You're evaluating a 60-game season, and that's – but you're also sort of imagining this to be, try to make this as normal a season as possible. I think the degree to he's special could also be a point against him if you say to yourself, there's no way that holds up if we get into month 4, 5, 6 of a baseball season. So he's going to get figured out at some point. And you know, I would say that you could say the same thing about any of the guys, but it's a greater likelihood that Baum and Cronenworth are more consistent over the course of a season being a position player than a reliever who just seems to have caught fire right now, has this pitch nobody can see. Right. You better believe the fourth time a Cardinals team sees that changeup, they're going to be able to hit it, or the Cubs or whatever, any team.
Well, the other thing I knew too is he was hurt at the end, JR, so he couldn't, you know, they used him 2 innings in his last 3 outings, and it looks like the workload finally gave him a sore shoulder, and so he wasn't active. So I knew that too, and maybe in the back of my mind I said, see, he didn't hold up to even a third of the season workload. But big deal, guys get banged up and hurt, and so I asked him on the conference call last night if his shoulder was okay. And his quote was, I'm still doing, quote, a little bit of rehab on it, but otherwise I feel good. And, you know, it was never presented to us as anything more than shoulder soreness. It was never suggested that he there's anything structural, and he didn't have any type of medical procedure. So he sounds like he was fine. But I do think, and I think that pitch, it's going to be interesting, JR, to see over the course of his career how much stress that pitch puts on your arm. For one thing, just the nature of a changeup is harder on your arm because you're slowing down the velocity while trying to keep the arm action looking the same. And it does create a little more stress on your arm, which is why guys that throw splitters sometimes have elbow problems, and guys that throw a lot of curves sometimes have elbow problems. And so I do wonder, you know, over the course of time, if that will create more stress on his arm than it might otherwise. Because when you watch the action on it, it's like a screwball. He reminds me so much of the way Teddy Higuera threw a screwball, in that it breaks the opposite direction of the way it should break. More than one person, including his own catchers, told us during the year that his changeup breaks like it's coming, like it's a breaking ball from a lefty. In other words, it's breaking the other way. And if you watch it, it does kind of go. And it has such a high spin rate and such, you know, it. How many pitchers in the history of baseball have gotten a nickname? It's called, you know, I think it was it the pitching ninja who called it Airbender?
Yeah, his pitch has a name, the Airbender.
I mean, that's pretty daggone amazing when you have a pitch that has its own name, you know. So I do, it will be interesting to see how, you know, and he also throws 97 with his fastball. it's just such a devastating two-pitch repertoire. He's a guy that's never going to have to worry about a third pitch, you know, and he's just not going to have to.
He's a great story. 2013, he's a second-round draft pick out of high school at that point. The Brewers didn't have a first-round pick that year because they had signed Kyle Loesch. That was sort of the competitive balance penalty there. Right. He does end up having Tommy John surgery during his rise through the minor league system. I think the changeup was certainly part of the repertoire, but I mean, if I'm being honest, looking back at the beginning of the season, I wasn't positive he was going to make this team out of camp. You know, the one memory I think we have of him from his 13 innings last season is giving up that massive home run in St. Louis that knocked out the Big Mac sign. Yeah. You know, he's a St. Louis native, so there's some sort of serendipity there, but I mean, he was fine last year. You could easily see him winning a spot in the bullpen, but to go from maybe going to make the roster to being indispensable to being more valuable than Josh Hader is something I don't think anybody could have seen. So the real question is, can he sustain it? I mean, and you're sort of touching on that, like, is this a flash in the pan, a 60 game flash, or is this a guy that the Brewers should think of as a top reliever in the game of baseball?
Well, we'll know how they consider him if they trade Josh Hader this winter.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will.
Because then we'll know they think it's not a fluke, because that's probably going to make him the closer. Let's talk about what changed his career arc. You know, the changeup is truly a magnificent pitch. But what changed his career arc, JR, is when they switched him from starting pitching to relieving a few years ago in the minors. He was not succeeding as a starting pitcher, and probably because he had a two-pitch repertoire, and it's harder to do that a couple of times through the lineup, even with analytics, you know, you got to go through two times through the lineup. It's hard to do that when you only throw two pitches. And so he wasn't succeeding as a starting pitcher, but when they switched him to relief a couple of years ago, man, all of a sudden things started coming together for him. And he took to it really well. And so many of the great the great relief pitchers that we see used to be starting pitchers. As a matter of fact, almost all of them, because how many guys are drafted or signed exclusively to be relief pitchers? Very few. And you want a young developing pitcher to be start because it allows them to throw more pitches and work more on this stuff. So, but starting wasn't for him, relieving was. And, you know, he stuck with it, and he gave a lot of credit last night to his mom. You know, he's raised basically by a single parent, his mother, and he gave a lot of credit to her last night for sticking with him and being the encouraging one and telling him don't give up, because I think he kind of came from a tough background in many ways. And so he deserves all the credit in the world, but so do the Brewers. You know, he goes all the way back to being drafted by Bruce Seid, who passed away a few years ago. So this is a couple of draft regimes ago that he was selected. And he wasn't a young rookie. He was 26. But I think Cronenworth was 26 too. And, sometimes you get spoiled by how young some real phenoms come up, you know, and then you realize that these are still young men. And so, but it's going to be interesting. You know, I was on the MLB Network, I was saying, we were just talking about how the Brewers do such a good job of finding relief pitchers, and often within their own system. And sometimes they flame out, like a Derek Turnbow or somebody like that. But when you look at some of the bullpens that struggle, and even in that 60-game season, the Phillies bullpen just destroyed them. And even David Phelps, after the Brewers traded him, pitched poorly there. They just couldn't get good work out of their bullpen, and some other teams had the same problem. But the Brewers have done such a good job in recent years of piecing together a bullpen. And I told those guys when I was talking on the MLB Network last night about the Brewers finding, quote unquote, finding relievers, I told them, write this name down right now, Justin Topa. And let's see if he's not next year's Devin Williams. Because let's not forget that Devin Williams had a little bit of audition last year. And that's kind of what Justin Topa had this year. And he also has some devastating pitches. He also is a high 90 guys with a high 90s mile per hour fastball. But he doesn't throw a changeup. He has a really good breaking ball. And, but he's kind of a freak too, and his story's so good too. Basically, discovered off of a Twitter video. The pitching ninja gets some credit there too. So, they've done such a, and then Brent Suter, the Swiss Army knife, and just on and on. They do such a good job of piecing together a bullpen, which is good because their manager really likes using his bullpen.
Yeah, before the current regime, I it's unfair to say, but I always said that they were so good at manufacturing closers out of nowhere. Derek Turnbow, John Axford, Dan Kolb, and Solomon Torres were the four examples I used. And ironically, when they went out and tried to spend money on an Eric Gagne in 2008, $10 million to get a proven closer, he backfired, and they had to go to Plan B. And now, in recent years, they've done it to an even greater degree. It's not just one or two guys back there; it's a whole unit of guys. Granted, other teams have had success as well. I mean, you mentioned Justin Topa, Drew Rasmussen is a name that we've
Yeah,
touched
thanks
on.
for bringing him up. There's another guy with just crazy good stuff, right? Another high 90s guy. So look at the depth they have in their bullpen. And that's why I think a trade of Josh Hader is something to keep an eye on this winter.
And I think if this were a normal year, we could have investigated more Josh Hader being used in a more traditional capacity this year as a sort of capital C closer. Wasn't working, across multiple innings. He was used primarily when the team had the lead. And I do think part of that is because, they know down the line they're not going to be the one paying Josh Hader for, so it doesn't matter if Josh Hader wants to get saves or rack up his bill. It doesn't matter because the Brewers ultimately will probably move on from him. He'll be too expensive. And a guy like Devin Williams can fit that role of use him when you need a multi-inning, use him in the eighth and the fifth, whatever you need, because you've got a guy who can get lefties and righties out universally. I
Right,
think.
and I think they also used Hader more traditionally, JR, because they knew it was a 60-game season, and if you used him a lot for multiple innings, it was going to really lessen the number of times he was able to pitch. And let's not forget, he started with a he had a historic season too. He had the most consecutive scoreless outings to open a year of any pitcher or any reliever in Major League history. So, I mean, they have two freakishly good. Arguably the well, I don't think arguably. I think definitely the best 1-2 tandem in baseball, right? Who else has two guys like that?
Yeah, he went on that big hitless streak to start the year. And it wasn't Josh Hader's most dominant year overall, but he definitely was, he was still Josh Hader, that's for sure. I think Hader coming into the season is a guy that I pinpointed as a possible Cy Young candidate because sort of what we talked about before. I thought relievers would play a bigger role this year than in past years. And that was borne out to be true. I mean, Hader didn't get into the Cy Young discussion at all, or even reliever of the year discussion at this rate, with Devin Williams winning that award. I do think, though, baseball overall has appreciated the reliever more. I do think ultimately we would have gotten to a place where a reliever who didn't get a save or a win would be regarded as a rookie of the year candidate or a reliever of the year candidate. I think we were headed there. I do think, though, in all respect to Devin Williams, this just does not happen with a bigger season. I think over the there would have been a greater disparity between the position players and the relievers if this had even been widened out to a 100 game season. I think ultimately this is something that exists inside the 60 game vacuum. But still, there is a greater appreciation for a guy like Devin Williams and for building units like the Brewers have with bullpen construction.
And it's nice that they, a few years back created the Reliever of the Year award. And I really like the names they attached to him too, Trevor Hoffman in the National League and Mariano Rivera in the American League. The two highest save guys ever in Major League history. So it's nice that they gave him their own award because they were so often excluded from Cy Young voting. So it's cool that that they do have those awards. And And so, the Brewers got a 3-year reign going in the National League reliever of the year. Hader had it the previous two seasons, and now Williams. So, there's a lot of teams that would like to have one of those two guys, much less both of them.
Before I let you go, I want to take a trip back in time. There's some serendipity with the 1992 selection of Pat Listash. That was really in the moments after a presidential election had been finished off. Bill Clinton defeats George Bush in 1992. The next day, Pat Listash learns that he's American League Rookie of the Year, and that was also set up to be a really close vote and ended up not being. It seemed like Kenny Lofton of Cleveland was the favorite or at least co-favorite to win that award along with Listash. Listash had won a couple of the other Rookie of the Year awards that were handed out before the baseball writers handed out theirs. But then Listash won fairly convincingly. And I know Kenny Lofton canceled his press conference that he was going to have at the stadium, the Cleveland Stadium that day. But what do you remember about that? Listash is interesting. His career doesn't, truly take off after that. I think he was more the face of an upstart franchise, maybe more so than an offensive juggernaut or anything. But he was sort of a surprise sensation that year in 92 for the Brewers. And, he's just sort of an interesting career to follow.
And he was that selection was panned in retrospect years later, which was not fair because Lofton went on to the greater career by far. But what happened was Pat Listash suffered a devastating knee injury the next year, a torn patella tendon, and he had more than one surgery on it, and it never was right again. It was kind of like Teddy Higuera's rotator cuff. It just was never right again. And speed was the primary tool that he had. He stole, 52 bases that Rookie of the Year. And it's what made him a good shortstop, too, because he had such good range. And so he just wasn't the same physically after that knee injury, and it led to a much shorter career, and Lofton went on to a way longer career. So a lot of people look back and said, see, it shouldn't have been Listash, it should have been Lofton. Well, you kind of live in the moment on these votes, and it's not – who's going to go on to have the best careers? Who was the best rookie this year? And it's way easier to tell, in my opinion, in 162 games than it is in 60 who the best guy was. And as you noted, I do think it helped that team was so surprisingly good, and that helped Listash. Although I do think in Rookie of the Year voting, unlike MVP, you can discount what the team did, and because it's really who was the best first year player. So, but Pat heard for years afterwards, I see you just proved to be a flash in the pan, but it really had more to do with that knee injury than anything. So, the Brewers have been in business, 51 years, right? And they had Listash in 92. So it took them from 1970 to 92 to get their first one. And then from 92 to 07 when Braun won, and that was a very close vote with Troy Tulowitzki. And a lot of people panned that one, too, and said it should have been Tulowitzki because he was a shortstop and Braun was an error-prone third baseman.
He was a third baseman by name only.
Yeah, he moved him right to left field the next year. And so then now, 13 years later, Devin Williams. So talk about apples and oranges. You had the everyday shortstop and then the third baseman who needed to move to the outfield and now a relief pitcher who was a setup guy. So three really different guys, right, and three really different circumstances.
And promise to Devin Williams and Brewers fans that we're not trying to hex him by bringing up Pat Listash's arc or Teddy Higuera's arc. That's a guy who took second in the Rookie of the Year voting. Obviously, the injury bug playing into that as well. Cal Eldred, that 92 season, was a rookie who was very good. I actually put together a list of the 11 best Brewers rookie seasons the way I saw it at jsonline.com. And you can also find Tom's story on Devin Williams winning National League Rookie of the Year at jsonline.com. as well. Tom, I will leave by saying I am all for you voting for Alec Baum. I know you're second guessing it a little bit. I honestly, if I look at it again, I think I might have voted Baum before the playoffs kicked in or before I knew anything else. But it is pretty cool that Devin Williams walks away with this award.
No question. And I'm glad my vote didn't cancel it out in any way. We don't have to ask for a recount. There were no mail-in ballots coming in late or anything. So you gotta be happy for the kid. And hopefully I've at least explained my thought process. John Heyman tweeted last night to me and Andrew Wagner, seeing that we had neither one voted him first, said, I can give them votes for integrity, but that doesn't mean that they didn't get it wrong. And I tweeted back at him, well, I don't know about the integrity part, but I'll endorse the getting it wrong part, you know. So, you know, you all I can tell you is that I always go through many, many incarnations of my ballot. And you know, because we have a small chapter, I doubled up this year and was given MVP too. And I will say, you know, we've got a couple of days. I will say that the three finalists in the National League, which means the three top vote getters, they are, I'm not going to tell you in what order, obviously, but they are the top three guys on my ballot. So I feel pretty good about that.
Nice. You're 2 for 2 in that regard. Did the same thing with Rookie of the Year, correct?
I know. Instead of woofing at me, how about giving me some kudos for having the right three guys, you know? And, okay, I can't line them up right after that, but at least I have the top three.
And you know, Ke'Bryan Hayes, Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May. You could have put any of those guys, but you got the three that everybody else seemed to settle on. So so that's cool. I'm expecting Freddie Freeman will win NL MVP, but that will certainly be an interesting thing to watch as well. Tom, thanks for joining us. We will chat with you again very soon.
Thanks, JR.
Find the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. As always, we'll be taking a pretty good break here. We might pop up intermittently as there is news. Nothing planned, though, in the immediate future. But thanks for tuning in. We will chat with you again very soon.